Israel and how they handled their travails in the wilderness. Three of these chapters are in the book of Psalms, Psalm 78, Psalm 95, and Psalm 106. We will not turn and look at those, but I would encourage you to read them in your own time, because these Psalms just really point a finger back at the Israelites and say, don't be those people. Don't face life, the difficulties of life, the way they treated their difficulties, because it's a dead end. It will get you nowhere. It will just make life worse. Then in the New Testament, 1 Corinthians 10, Paul specifically uses the Israelites and all the mistakes that they made in the wilderness as an example for us not to follow. And in particular, he talks about the Israelites and their grumbling, their murmuring against God because of the hardships that they were experiencing. And he tells the Corinthians, don't do that. Don't be that kind of person. And again, in Hebrews chapter 3, actually Hebrews 3 goes back and quotes from Psalm 95, which in turn is a mirror of what happened in the wilderness to Israel. And the Hebrew writer is again making the same story. Don't treat life and the hardships of life the way the Israelites dealt with their hardships. So over and over again, the Bible keeps throwing up the example of the Israelites as how not to deal with suffering and hardship in life. And that's why we're devoting a whole lesson to their story this evening. First thing I'd like for us to do is pose the question, why did God send the Israelites through the wilderness? Now, I have a map here on the screen that shows the traditional route of the Israelites. It's generally understood. It's coming from the land of Goshen up here in Lower Egypt, they went south to Mount Sinai and then back up toward the Promised Land. And as you trace their journey through this place, it's obvious it was a very hard, difficult territory for them to traverse, which raises the question, why did God send them that way? I mean, when you look at the map, what would have been the most logical path for them to take? If they started here and the Promised Land is right here, where would you expect them to go? Yeah, just right along the Mediterranean coast. That'd just be the quickest, shortest, easiest route right there. Boom, they're home. So why didn't God send them that way? Well, we don't have to speculate because God actually tells us why he did not send them that way. Look in Exodus 13. This is right after Pharaoh has given the green light. You people get out of here. So they're on their way. And notice that Moses records this. In verse 17 of Exodus 13, then it came to pass when Pharaoh had let the people go, that God did not lead them by the way of the land of the Philistines, and that is the short route on the map, although that was near, for God said, and here's God's reasoning, lest perhaps the people change their minds when they see war and return to Egypt. So God led the people around by the way of the wilderness of the Red Sea, and the children of Israel went up in orderly ranks out of the land of Egypt. So what does God give as his reason for not taking the quick route? War with probably the Philistines, right? And knowing what we know about the Philistines in later history, do you think the Israelites would have been prepared for that? No way. I mean, who are the Israelites? Slaves. They had zero experience managing any kind of military operation. They were slaves not just in their history and their attitude, their heart, their background, everything about them left them totally unprepared for that sort of thing. So in essence, was God doing them a favor leading them through the wilderness, given the alternative? Would it be fair to say that what God was doing here was sparing them unnecessary suffering? If he could take them the long way around and avoid the Philistines, come in, as it were, through the back door, then the Philistines and that kind of warfare would simply not be an issue. They wouldn't have to face that. Now, it meant a longer route, and it came with its own set of hardships, but actually God was doing them a favor. He was sparing them from experiencing a form of suffering that they could not handle. What did Paul say in 1 Corinthians 10? God will not allow you to be tempted beyond what you're able to bear. God knew the Israelites could not bear war with the Philistines at this point in their history. He was saving them from suffering. So let's go on. Look at Deuteronomy chapter 8. This is a fascinating chapter. If you really want to understand God's perspective on the whole Israel experience, or wilderness experience of Israel, then read the 8th chapter of the book of Deuteronomy. We will not take the time to do that because we have a lot of material this evening, but I have on this next chart, I've put just a few excerpts from Deuteronomy 8 to give you a sense or a flavor of what this chapter is about. And in this chapter, Moses is explaining to the Israelites, actually the second generation of Israel, why he led them through the wilderness. We've already seen one reason, to spare them from having to do battle right away with the Philistines, but there is a secondary, and actually probably a more important reason, and that's what's laid out here. Now let's just skim through this chapter. In verse 2, Moses said, "It was to humble you and test you to know what was in your heart." Does suffering humble us? Does it teach us humility? Do we need humility? Sure we do. It's when we get proud and cocky that we set ourselves up for a fall. And Moses is arguing here that God sent you through the wilderness to teach you humility. You needed that. But also, verse 3, that it might make you know that man shall not live by bread alone, but by every word that proceeds from the mouth of the Lord, so that you will know that man shall not live by bread alone. Who were they depending on as they were going through the wilderness? Why? Exactly. If it wasn't for God, what would have happened to them? They're gone. Vulture food. It was God that kept them alive. It was God that provided for them. God that cared for them. And this is what Moses is arguing here, is that this was an opportunity for Israel to learn that their very existence depended upon the God who brought them up out of Egypt. He didn't just rescue them from Egypt, get them out of that place, but he was with them the whole way. So that if their mind was in the right place, they would recognize we are wholly dependent on him. So humility, dependence on God. And then look at the third bullet, verse 5. As a man chastens his son, so the Lord your God chastens you. Now those of us who had fathers who disciplined us, what was the purpose of that discipline? Ostensibly, now they weren't perfect, but generally, what was the purpose of discipline? It certainly involves correction, but what's the bigger picture, the bigger objective? Character building, right? Every one of us as little kids, we need our character to be shaped and molded and crafted into what we need to become as adults. And it's our parents who provide the chastening, the discipline, the training that makes that possible. And that's what Moses is arguing God was doing with Israel in the wilderness. They were children who were being chastened. They were being trained. They were being disciplined by God for their new life in their new home. Is that a good thing or a bad thing? All of us who are adults have been through childhood. Is it a good thing or a bad thing to be chastened? It's a good thing. It's not pleasant at the moment, but in the long run we recognize it's a much needful thing that we have to go through in order to be prepared for adulthood. The fourth thing that Moses mentions in verse 16, that he might humble you, that he might test you. Now he's already said that back in verse 2, but he adds, to do you good in the end. Now let that soak in. Think about that. He's let them go through this whole wilderness experience, he says at the very last line, to do you good in the end. So ultimately, had Israel been paying attention, if they were taking the long-term view of their whole experience out here, trudging through the desert, what was God's intention for them in going through that? What was God ultimately trying to achieve with them? They would be a better people. They'd be prepared to take this new land that God had promised them. It would do them good in the end. But where's the end? How far away is the end? Well, that's the kicker, isn't it? And we're going to talk about time frames here in just a moment. Yeah, the chastening can be for a good purpose, but only if you can see that purpose at the end. And the Israelites couldn't see it. All they could see was what was right in front of their nose. And they saw nothing beyond that. And as a result, they reacted very poorly. So let's turn and look for just a moment at the kind of sufferings they experienced. We simply don't have time to go through and look at all the examples in the books of Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, of the kind of sufferings that the Israelites experienced. Here's just a quick bullet list. You can probably add other items to this. We'll skim through this quickly. I mean, obviously, when you've got a couple million people going through a desert, what's the greatest need that they have? Food and water, right, of which they had precious little at the outset. In fact, the very first complaint that they offered was, we have no water. The next complaint they offered, we have no food. And, of course, how did God respond to these complaints? He provided for them. Now, you might think, okay, well, their complaining paid off, didn't it? What would God have done had they not complained? He would have given them food and water. He wasn't going to lead them out in the wilderness to kill them off by hunger and thirst. They just started complaining before he did that. What did we just see here in Deuteronomy 8? What's that word that comes up several times in there? He led you through this wilderness in order to do what? To test you, to see what's in your heart. And now 3 days after they crossed the Red Sea, what are they doing? What heart are they displaying to God? A complaining, grumbling, murmuring heart. So God found the answer to his test, didn't he? Well, walking through a hot, desolate land. Now, this was no paradise, no Garden of Eden that they were walking through. And if you can imagine taking your aged parents, dragging your little kids, your babies through a hot wilderness like this, it had to be tough. Yeah, I just can't imagine the logistics that were involved in taking a huge group of people through a land like this, but that's what they were having to do, and it had to be terribly inconvenient for them. Attacks from marauding bands. There are several stories about, I think, the Amalekites, Moabites. There are several of these tribes in that area that attacked them or harassed them along the way, and they had to deal with that. And then, of course, the consequences of their own rebellion. Much of the suffering that you read about the Israelites experiencing was a direct result of their complaining. God would punish them for something stupid that they had done, and that just adds more suffering on top of everything else that they're experiencing. And then when they finally got to the border of the Promised Land, they sent spies in. What was the message that the spies came back with? We can't take this. Strong, fortified cities, powerful enemies. There's no way we can do this. We are not militarily prepared to take on an adversary like we saw in the land of Canaan. And of course, what was the people's response to these spies? They just wailed and cried all night. You know, you've led us out here in the wilderness to get slaughtered, to die. It's hopeless. They wanted to appoint new leaders and go back to the land of Egypt. So here are the kinds of sufferings, just in brief, that we want to notice. What had these Israelites witnessed with their own eyes just a few days before? The crossing of the Red Sea with walls of water on either side. So these were the kinds of sufferings that they experienced during their time in the wilderness. But what we want to notice now in these next couple of slides is how Israel chose to respond to the sufferings that they experienced. This first slide is just some examples from the book of Exodus. First one is from Exodus 15, verse 24. And this is just 3 days after they have crossed the Red Sea. We're told the people complained against Moses because they had no water to drink. And we just touched on this a moment ago. I'm convinced this is one of the tests that God was placing before them. He wanted to see how they would react to the stress of not having something to drink. Now, you might think, well, that's a little unfair. He knew that they needed water. But we'll see in just a moment that there was an alternative to complaining that apparently just never crossed their mind. The second complaint, just a chapter later, they complained against Moses and Aaron. Oh, that we had died by the hand of the Lord in the land of Egypt. And here their concern is lack of food. In chapter 17, the people complained against Moses. They tempted the Lord, saying, is the Lord among us or not? In that statement, what kind of mindset do you see that the Israelites are harboring in their hearts? Is the Lord among us or not? Yeah, everything is negative. Even God. It's like they're shaking their fist at God. And how dare you not give us what we want? Just see, as parents, we would look at our children saying something like that and say, child, you've got an attitude problem, and I'm going to fix it. Right? That's what God is dealing with the children of Israel here. Look in chapter 32. This is when Moses has gone up on Mount Sinai to receive the law. He's gone for 40 days, and after some period of time, The people have no idea where Moses is at. And so here's their solution in verse 1. Come, make us gods that shall go before us. As for this Moses, we do not know what has become of him. So they're basically, at this point, ready to just shrug the whole enterprise off. And let's make gods like we're familiar with from the land of Egypt. Aaron plays a role in facilitating that. And of course, you know how that whole story played out. I mean, God was just furious. And at that point, he was ready to just obliterate them and start over with Moses. And Moses was the one that talked God out of it. No, spare them. Lay the blame on me. You know, let's keep going with this. And God did forgive. Now, that's how Israel responded in the book of Exodus. But you go on into the book of Numbers, and it seems like they just have a hard time learning their lesson. In chapter 11, we're told when the people complained, it displeased the Lord. Now, in this particular setting, we're not actually told what the source of the complaining was, or what the trigger was that caused them to start complaining. Later in that section, we're told that there were some who came up with Israel, the mixed multitude, who yielded to intense craving. So the children of Israel also wept again. And their statement was, our whole being is dried up. Our whole being is dried up. Now, what does it tell you about their state of mind? Patience, by definition, includes an element of joy, that we can see beyond the present hardship to something better beyond. And that cheers us up. These people had nothing to cheer about. They're just shriveled up on the inside. And all they know to do when they hit a rough spot is just complain and bellyache about it. Look in chapter 14 of Numbers, in verse 2. All the children of Israel complained against Moses and Aaron. If only we had died in the land of Egypt. Now this is their response to the report of the 10 spies who came back and said, it's a good land, but there's no way we can take it. Strong fortified cities, powerful enemies. We cannot take on this task of taking the land. And so at that point, the Israelites were told, in fact, I think the text says they cried all night long. If only we had died in the land of Egypt. And you see this kind of language over and over again throughout Exodus and Numbers. Their nostalgia takes them back to Egypt. We had everything we wanted back in Egypt. We had food. We had water. We had a place to live. We didn't have to trudge miles and miles to this hot, dusty desert every day like we're having to do now. I mean, it's just totally negative approach to the condition that they were in. In chapter 20, verses 3 through 5, the people contended with Moses, saying, why have you made us come up out of Egypt to bring us to this evil place? Now let that one soak in. What are they calling this section of land that they're in on their way to the promised land? What do they call it? A place that God has led them to. An evil place. Have you ever been in an evil place in your life? Think about that. Some place that you didn't want to be. And it wasn't very fun. It wasn't very pleasant. And you'd give anything to be anywhere than where you were at. That was an evil place. But think about how the Israelites dealt with their evil place. They were complaining to God about it. Even though, as we've already seen, God said, this is for your good. I'm going to do you good in the end. But they had to go through an evil place to get there. They could never connect the dots in their own mind. And then finally, in Numbers 21, verse 5, the soul of the people became very discouraged on the way, and the people spoke against God and against Moses. Our soul loathes this worthless bread. And what is this worthless bread that they're so contemptible of? Manna from heaven every night. Now, think about that. Here is food from God every day. They have plenty to eat, plenty to keep them alive. It's nourishing. Granted, it may be a little old, eating it day after day after day, but it's food, it's nourishment, it's keeping them alive. And all they can call it is this worthless bread. And what does that tell you about their heart? Terribly ungrateful, right? So then, let's summarize all of this. How Israel viewed their suffering. Clearly you get the impression here, they believed God had just abandoned them. How many times does he say, you led us out here to kill us in the wilderness? God had double-crossed them. Second, they saw no hope of something better in their life. As you noted a moment ago, everything was about the here and now. what's happening to me at this moment in time. And if it's not positive, if it's not pleasant, if it's not fun, then life's just not worth living. Have you ever known people that treat life that way? What's the problem? What are they not seeing? The big picture. What lies beyond? They also forgot the good things that God had done for them. How many times in all of this do you hear the Israelites thanking God for taking them out of Egyptian bondage? They never mentioned it. They saw it, they witnessed it, they lived it, but then just as soon as they got out of the wilderness, it was just ancient history, they forgot it. It didn't mean anything to them anymore. Total ingratitude for what God had done for them. Their freedom from bondage in Egypt, the manna from heaven every day, the water coming forth from rocks, the victory over their oppressors as they were going along the way and these marauding bands would attack them. In short, the people just became very impatient, did they not? I can't think of a better word to describe Israel in the wilderness. They were a terribly impatient people. They had a long list of demands they wanted God to meet, and if He didn't concur with their list of demands, then He wasn't worth following anymore. So the real problem is identified in a number of places. Look in Numbers 14 and verse 11. This is God speaking, "How long will these people reject me, and how long will they not believe in me?" Deuteronomy 1, verse 32, Moses says, "Yet for all that, all these things that God did in their behalf, you did not believe the Lord your God." Psalm 106, we referred to that a moment ago, the whole psalm is about the wilderness experience. Verses 24 and 25, "Then they despised the pleasant land, they did not believe His word, but complained in their tents." And then Hebrews 3, which we referenced earlier, "Beware, brethren, lest there be in any of you an evil heart of unbelief in departing from the living God." So we see that they could not enter in because of unbelief. Now what do all these passages point a finger at? What's the root problem? Their faith, their lack of faith. Were they atheists? Then why do these Bible writers say they had no faith? It's one thing to believe that God exists. It's an entirely different thing to have confidence and trust in God. Did they have anybody else, though, that you think they might could have lived for? Their children and grandchildren, right. The outcome, of course, was that their impatience in the face of their suffering only serve to intensify their suffering. And I really love this. Somebody pointed out to me one time, if you look at Deuteronomy 1 and verse 2, Moses just makes kind of an offhand comment that the journey from Mount Sinai to Kadesh Barnea, the border of the Promised Land, was an 11-day journey. How long did it take them to go an 11-day journey? 40 years. One preacher wrote one time that short journeys always take a lot longer when sin comes along for the ride. And that's what happened to the Israelites. Their fears became a self-fulfilling prophecy, and they ended up dying in this wilderness, or that generation did. So, we referred to this earlier. What alternative did they have? I mean, these were very real problems that they were facing. The lack of food, lack of water. What would have been a more mature way for the Israelites to respond to their problems? And I have a quick list here of four things they could have done. Number one, they could have been thankful for the positives in their lives. As we noticed a while ago, they really didn't do that. They just forgot about all that God had done for them. They could have prayed for God's help and deliverance. Do you think God would have responded to those prayers? Absolutely. That was part of the test. He's letting them experience hardship to see how they would respond, what was in their heart. And what he found was they didn't have much faith. If they had the faith, they could have humbly prayed to God, "Please give us what we need," and God would have graciously provided it. They could have cooperated with Moses and God instead of dragging their feet. God and Moses basically had to drag them kicking and screaming to the Promised Land. That doesn't speak very well for their character, does it? They could have looked forward with eager anticipation to their new home in Canaan, but they just really had no concept of that. In their minds, it was a lost cause. Not even worth fooling with. And then finally, I want to look at several quick lessons that we can learn from their story today. Number one, life is tough, but God has His reasons for the tough things we have to experience. And it's usually for our good. We often can't see it. That doesn't mean it's not there. Number two, becoming bitter about the suffering that we experience only sets us up for deeper disappointment down the line. Number three, impatience in the face of hardship could be a symptom of an underlying faith problem. And that's what many of us don't want to face up to. If we're really struggling with hardships in our lives, we need to look deep in our hearts and ask ourselves, do I really believe and trust and have confidence in God or not? And number four, when suffering hits, look for more constructive ways to respond. Don't just make your default reaction always negative, always down, always complaining, always murmuring, always lashing out at people or God or whatever. If that's your default way of responding to suffering, you've got a serious problem up here, and you need to fix that. There are more constructive ways of dealing with the hardships and the travails in your life than that way. Next week, we're going to look at the story of Job. And I think Job served as a fantastic counterpoint to the story of the Israelites. Did Job complain? Yes or no? Did he complain to God? He did. So why is he any different than the Israelites? Well, just camp on that for next week, and we'll deal with that question then.